Welcome to another episode of the Oncology On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Roman Fabricator. In this episode, various oncologists spoke about the clinical landscape for marginal zone lymphoma, contextualized by a recently held MZL workshop where a significant gathering of international experts in the field spoke on the disease state. First, Thomas Haberman, professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, member of the Lymphoma Research Foundation's Scientific Advisory Board, and MZL workshop co-chair, spoke about the significance of the MZL workshop. All of the interview questions have been re-recorded for audio clarity. What is the significance of the MZL workshop?
In 1999 and then in 2024, we brought together the leading individuals internationally in marginal zone lymphoma. We did this because it is one of the most complicated group of lymphomas as far as its biology, its treatment, and the outcomes. It is an incredibly heterogeneous group of disorders that most clinicians and even individuals in the field of lymphoma don't quite appreciate.
Next, Julie M. Vos, George and Peggy Payne Chair in Oncology and Chief of Hematology and Oncology at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, spoke about how the MZL workshop contributes to advancing research and improving outcomes for patients with MZL. How does the MZL workshop contribute to advancing research and improving outcomes for patients with MZL?
So since it is such a rare lymphoma, it's difficult to do clinical trials for marginal zone lymphoma, and they often are included with other types of indolent or slow-growing lymphomas on trials. So it's important to get different experts together to be able to collaborate, put their data together, and to analyze some of these clinical trials and new research and new treatments for marginal zone lymphoma, and just try to put all of our heads together and make sure that we can understand the data and to formulate new clinical trials. So with such rare types of diseases, this type of workshop is really important for advancing the treatments of this and research into this marginal zone lymphoma.
Then, James R. Seren, professor of epidemiology at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science, and Ralph S. and Beverly Calkins, professor of cancer research, spoke about research questions in MZL epidemiology in need of addressing to further disease understanding. What are the most pressing research questions in MZL epidemiology that must be addressed to further improve our understanding of this disease?
In terms of causes of marginal zone lymphoma, there are some newer risk factors that require additional study, including smoking, alcohol use, sun exposure, physical activity, and certain occupations. As we have better tools also to identify pathogens, I think this should be pursued, particularly for the extranodal marginal zone lymphomas. So there could be some new findings there. In terms of outcomes after marginal zone diagnosis, it'd be really important to be able to predict at diagnosis who is likely to have an early treatment failure, that event within 24 months of their diagnosis, because then we could identify patients upfront that really need to have different treatments. You know, they're not going to do well on their current standard. And these are the people you want to get on clinical trials, as well as studying their biology. And we need to identify new treatment targets for those patients. However, those patients who go 24 months without a relapse or progression, and subsequently really go on to die of other causes, really you can reassure them and really manage them with a low touch. You don't need to be aggressive with them because they're going to live out their expected life expectancy.
Additionally, Alexander Zankov, surgical pathologist and head of the Department of Histopathology and Autopsy at the Institute of Medical Genetics and Pathology at University Hospital Basel, discussed prognostic factors for MZL and their influence on treatment. What are the important prognostic factors for MZL, and how do they influence treatment decisions?
Beyond the clinical prognostic factors that are more or less summarized in Flippy analogous scoring, there are not a lot of well-established prognostic factors in nodal marginal zone lymphomas, yet there may be some. For sure, the involvement of the bone marrow that we discussed previously is probably not a sole prognostic marker, but it, of course, can discern between patients with limited stage disease who may be potentially curable with irradiation as soon as this is considered, from patients who are not curable. This by no means means that patients with bone marrow involvement would for sure have poorer outcomes, yet the probability of having poorer outcomes is higher. So this is the one thing. For sure, hyperperforation rate over 50% is rather suggestive of a more aggressive behavior of the marginal zone lymphoma. The presence of complex karyotypes is considered a probable negative prognostic factor. And there are some limited studies suggesting that NOTCH3 mutations or TP53 mutations or mutations of a gene called TBL1XR1 may forecast more aggressive clinical behavior. But all this information is from limited number of studies with limited numbers of patients and a rather retrospective ones. In addition, the detection of sheets of blasts by the hematopathologist when diagnosing the nodal marginal zone lymphoma may be linked to a more aggressive behavior, yet the books are still not closed in order how to define these sheets of blast, but it's suggested that monotonous proliferations of large cells that are more than 20% of the neoplastic population would meet this criterion. So everything is not well established and rather based on information from retrospective or limited number, how is it called, underpowered studies. Yeah.
Finally, Andrew D. Zelenitz, Medical Director of Quality Informatics at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, outlined challenges related to adverse effect management of treatments for MZL. What are the challenges to managing adverse effects?
Each of these new classes of drugs has its own side effect profile. What happened to the PI3 kinase inhibitors? Well, the FDA felt that the way they were being developed, they were actually more risk than benefit, which is why they sort of put the kibosh on the class, though it is not impossible to change the development strategy, which we actually did for one of these agents, and actually show that you could actually have a favorable safety versus toxicity profile. But for the drugs we're actively developing and actively using, like rituximab monotherapy, which is still a mainstay, BTK inhibitors, the investigational use of CAR T cells and bispecific antibodies, all of these, while we're not seeing unique toxicities associated with these agents, with an exception, I'll get to that in a second, what we're seeing in large measure is a side effect profile similar to other B-cell malignancies. Now, sometimes marginal zone lymphoma can have a significant leukemic phase. So there can be a lot of circulating lymphoma cells. And in that setting, particularly with bispecific antibodies and CAR T cells, there can be exacerbation of cytokine release syndrome. These toxicities can be mitigated by a variety of strategies, such as reducing the disease burden before going into treatment. That's a frequent approach with CAR T cells to use some bridging treatment to do some cytoreduction. We know that cytoreduction, if we left it alone, would be transient, but that is in one way of doing it. And then with the bispecific antibodies, to do what we call step-up dosing, where we use a small amount of the drug and then increase the drug over time. And these are ways that we can mitigate this overstimulation of T cells that contribute to the cytokine release syndrome. But again, these are challenges that we can see in other settings with B-cell lymphomas. And marginal zone lymphoma, fortunately, does not represent a uniquely difficult area with respect to a side effect profile of drugs.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.